Managing your home finances can feel pretty lonely, like when you look at your bank account and wonder where your paycheck went, or when the gap between your income and expenses just keeps shrinking. You might feel like you're the only one dealing with that. I'm Carly Hill, and on the Debt-Free Mom podcast, we talk with women and families about confidently managing your money. From saving to budgeting to caring for the things we own, we find practical ways to move from feeling stuck to stable with our money. Join the conversation on the Debt-Free Mom podcast.
This is That Twin Mama Podcast. But hey, you don't have to be a twin mom to be here. I'm not like a regular mom. I'm a cool mom. So whether you are new, soon to be, or seasoned parent, or maybe you just hope to have kids someday, I promise you'll find something to love, learn from, or laugh at in each episode. I'm your host, Lauren Birdie. Let's do it.
Welcome back, y'all, to part two of my conversation with Lindsay of Tweet Dreams on Twinsomnia, all things around sleep teaching and training and things that I wish I knew as my littles were very little. This week, we're going to dive in talking about twin-specific lenses when it comes to sleep training and teaching. One thing that was really difficult for me as a twin mom is like you'd see all these different sleep consultants and sleep experts talking about one child, but like it's not the same when you have two in the same room or three in the same room. It's very different. And so we really get into specific tricks and different tools that we use that were helpful to have in having twins and sleep training twins. And then we get into more like toddler things where like if you're transitioning from your crib to your bed, things to look out for, products we swear by. I feel like there's so many different products for sleeping that like, and a sleep deprived mom will literally give like everything they have, their like right arm for their babies to sleep. So there's some out there that like with twins, you just can't afford, and are they even really worth it? So we go into a lot of that. So I'm very excited for this episode. Oh, and not to mention regressions. If you know, you know, if your child is hitting a regression, if like they've hit the 4-month one and you're like, who is this child? We go through that regression along with all the ones that can happen up until like age 3, which if I'm scaring you, I'm sorry, but we talk about things and how to prepare for that. But I really hope y'all love this episode. Let's get into it.
I want to move into all these things we're speaking about, but with a twin specific lens, because it's something that I think it like either, you know, you don't, or you have experience with, or you don't, because I feel like there's some sleep consultants that have worked with twin parents, but unless you've actually had twins too, it's just another layer of understanding. And it's interesting you say that, because I think my initial reaction to the stay in the room, I was like, literally, how would that work when there's two and I'm alone? Like some days my husband would travel or be on tour, whatever. Or like, if you don't have the ability, like you have two arms, so it could work, but it just works differently. Everything works differently when there's one. It's still extremely difficult, but there's another layer of like thinking about how to sleep teach when there's two babies who are likely completely different. They're two separate human beings. Twins are not identical or not. Every twin parent will say, it's night and day with my twins. I know my twin A has this, twin B. Like, it's just, they're completely different people. So thinking about sleep training and sleep teaching with twins, a question, a big one we got was around co-sleeping. Can they sleep? Let's talk about co-sleeping, same bassinet and crib. And then also just like sleeping in the same room. What are your thoughts? What are your suggestions? What is your expert opinion on each?
So I would advise every parent to follow the guidelines where they live, because okay, it's very different actually. So we are in the United States, right? But we might have listeners all over.
Yes.
So we know in the United Kingdom, it's much different. And they actually do encourage twins to sleep together due to just bonding and self-settling. Huh. Whereas if I remember anything, when I left the hospital, they said they must sleep separately. Right. And so if you look at the guidelines with the AAP, which were just updated in summer of 2021, so be sure to check those out, because there were some significant changes there in the guidelines. But they're going to continue to encourage the guideline of alone, back, and crib. So when you say alone, and it doesn't mean people aren't going to do whatever they want.
Yeah.
But the true and final answer is, get yourself two bassinets and two cribs.
Yeah.
Right. You're going to want to have them close when they're little.
Yeah.
But then they're going to go into separate cribs. But 99% of the time, probably room sharing, right?
Right, right. Unless you have the space and everything to do so. And I'll give my opinion. I'll give just what we did, because I mean, and then take this with a grain of salt to like what, listen to what Lindsay said, go by where you live. When I was in the hospital, my OB, was like, they should be together. They need to like snug. This is in the US, which was, that was just her. She's a little old school. She's amazing. And I was like, okay. And like, had that happen. And then the next nurse or someone came in, you know, you're in there and all these people are coming in and out like, oh, you need this. And they were like, oh, no, they have to be separate. So I got two different things with that. I let them be together in the hospital. I had bought a bassinet that wasn't two bassinets, but it was a twin one. So there was a separation and that's what we used. So they could almost like, they were together, but there was a separation. It was made specifically for twins. And that's what worked for us. And they were both by our bedside table. And then when we transitioned to cribs, two cribs, done, same room. And that's kind of what we did. And I will say there are moms who like, I've heard like share that their twins co-sleep or don't co-sleep and are like attacked on the internet. But again, we should listen to the research and listen to you, what you want to do. But also there's probably guidelines in place where you live for a reason, but I'm not here to judge you, whatever you do kind of thing. Neither one of us are. So thinking about like when they're actually sleep training, because this is a big question I had. Are twins shared? And I was always, the biggest question I had was so worried, like they're screaming or twin A is screaming at the top of her lungs. She's about to wake up her sister. And yeah, it didn't seem like she did sometimes, but then maybe sometimes she did. It was kind of hard to remember in those stages. But what are your thoughts or tips on twins who are sharing a room and how to successfully teach them to sleep when they might be in different schedules or getting them on the same schedule or when they wake, will they wake up each other? All the things that come with that.
Yeah, I think all of us are going to bring our kids home and have that twin idea of putting them in the same room, right?
Yeah.
Unless you said, for whatever reason, we split them up. And
yeah,
just disclaimer, you know, I split mine up at 6.5 months.
Oh, wow. Wanted to. I'm jealous. I didn't have another room, but yeah.
You know, I've personally coached 125 families with twins. And so I would say I have less than a handful that were separated.
Yeah.
They're always going to be sharing a room just out of like, say, convenience or just the bond or whatever it is. So when we think about that, I just tell parents, these are all extra variables we have to take into consideration.
Yeah.
So what can we do to simplify this? Because what's worse than one baby awake? It's two. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so parents get into this almost emergency status where the moment they hear a peep or squeak, they're in there. Right.
Yes.
So the one twin or both twins, they never had an opportunity to even try to get themselves back to sleep because mom was there in an instant.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Because we're so scared. We're so scared.
We hear it. We're so scared. And then like, I'm also, I think with twins too, I'm like, don't wake up your sister. Like I need to like prevent you too, like from waking the other one up.
Exactly. But it's a band-aid fix because when we're teaching sleep, yes, we can understand there's going to be some signaling and communication in the form of crying, but it's very much designed to be so short term because the new product is sleep and your baby would much rather sleep than listen to their twin cry.
Yes.
Right. They are learning how to sleep. They're going to welcome it. And so we really have to sort of put those fears aside and trust that it will iron out. So to help with that, I would say, you know, we definitely have them in separate cribs. They're at least 3 feet apart. If you could even do separate walls, that's great.
Yeah.
Right. We've got a sound machine for sure. And you're not going to put it near the door to, you know, drown out the toddler. You're going to put it in between the cribs so that they can protect from each other. Cause I think that's the most important.
So smart. Yes.
Yeah. So those are my biggest like logistical tips. And then if we're working with toddlers for sure, that room has to be like pitch black, dark.
Oh my,
right?
Yeah. All the things. So it's interesting because my twin's room is in my old office. I work now from my kitchen table, but that's fine. So it's very small. So they are in L shape with their cribs. It was the only option. I wanted to do the separate. If I had another room, girl, I was so protective of their sleep. I would have been like sleep different because I wanted them to sleep.
Yeah, you're like, I'll build
something. Yeah, you guys can crawl through when you're awake. No, we're sleeping. But that just wasn't an option for me. So there, we still made it work. So their cribs were closed. I still was able to sleep teach them probably around like the six month mark. So all to say, if you aren't able to do some of the logistical constraints with your twins, and they are confined, still doing methods and still learning from a consultant or still being consistent can totally work. It's just may be easier or may not be, but some things and some logistical factors may make it easier. But for me, I didn't have it and it still was okay. I will say I was also surprised that like, I was more nervous because those screams and cries could be like loud. Like I would wake up, but it's like they almost got used to each other in a weird way, like by just leaving them in together. And then that was just their life. Like there was no, if you're going to have your kids sleep together, this is what I would say. And tell me, Lindsay, if you agree, but I think if you're going to have your twins ultimately share the same room, have them share the same room. Like if you separate them because you want to sleep train them and then bring them back to each other, like it's going to be another transition, right?
No, right. I always say start the way you want to end.
Yes. So, start the way you want to end.
Right. It's like getting used to, you move somewhere and the train comes by at 2 a.m. You're going to hear it for about a week.
Yes.
And then after that, your brain's like, this is not a threat.
Right.
Whatever. So you sleep through it. And so the same thing with hearing a sibling peep, squeak, make noise, cry, whatever it is. Because babies are noisy, right?
They are.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
And so they're going to have to get used to just tuning it out more or less.
Yeah. And they do. It's weird. It's wild. Like, I mean, of course, as mothers, my husband hears differently. I really do think there's a gender thing with that, but I hear every single second, every peep immediately. Oh. He sleeps through it. So just imagine your twins are I shouldn't say this, but your twins are kind of like a husband that can sleep through anything. If you put them together, they sleep through each other's cries. Easy. Just like anybody else would. So, okay. So that's super helpful. And then I think another wondering that many twin parents had, is, and this kind of has to do with feeding, I think as well, but do you wake up like, especially, I don't even know when, like, do you ever wake up a twin or to keep them on the same schedule or like try to do that at any phase of the like newborn to babyhood-ish years? Like how does that work?
Yeah, I think it differs by day or night.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the beginning, they're eating at night, every 2 to 3 hours. And so we kept our twins synced up. And that even meant the worst part was it would take almost an hour to get one down. And then the other one was up and she'd only been sleeping, you know, an hour. And it's like it was already the 3 hours. So we had to wake her up again. So that was really frustrating. But I feel like it gave us a sense of just direction and purpose because we would have gotten the other one down and we would have been up 30 minutes later anyway. Yeah. So I do tell parents that as long as there's feeding's present. So newborn, 4, 5, 6 months old, whatever, you haven't night weaned yet, make use of those long chunks of sleep, right? Because when it's separated, dissected, we're not being restored. So if you know that your twins eat at night, but you don't really know what time and you're like, well, what if I just left him go? Would he go all night? You know, but what if he's up 2 or 3 hours later anyway? So I would suggest to wake them up so that you can feed them together.
Yes.
And then you're getting long stretches of sleep on the other side. Now in the daytime, yes, do everything you can to have your twins on a schedule. I have a great blog on this because it's like the top question I get. How do we even start a schedule? Right? With twins. How do we get on one?
Yeah.
It's very, very achievable, very doable.
Yeah.
Right. What I tell parents is every day is a brand new start. So if you screwed it up yesterday or it didn't go well, you get to start again today. Right. And with twins, we know we have like a 25% chance of success.
Yeah.
Right. That's how I felt. I had like very little percentage of things going great over here.
Yeah. You know, yeah, the four.
And then I also talk about, you know, waking a sleeping baby, which totally sucks, for lack of a better word. You know, we have one twin that wants to sleep 2 hours, the other one wants to sleep 2 hours, right? So frustrating. So in my teachings, my programs, even in my free guides, I talk about how to keep twins synced up, boom, 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 throughout the day.
And yeah, I feel like I have another episode where we talk specifically about twin feedings. And I do think, I mean, to each their own, but I had to get my twins on the schedule. I had to. I knew, like, until this day, twin B will sleep longer than twin A. She just needs more. It's biological for her. But like, as they were growing, it's like, okay, you're waking up for a feeding. I'm going to give you like 15 minutes, your sister, but I'm going to wake her up as well within that window. And eventually it was like, boom, clockwork. But I mean, if you don't do this, totally fine. I would not survive. Like, I don't know how not to do that, because I needed them on the same schedule, because one baby is enough. But what if they were on opposite? Then you just wouldn't sleep. It's not sustainable, at least not for me. So I totally, totally agree with that. Okay. Let's talk about regressions, because your girl didn't really remember regressions with my first. I think we just black out everything like that was negative as far as like hard with kids. And so we just keep on having more, but I definitely remember all of them with the girls. And I'm just like, what is a sleep regression? Let's just, in case someone has never heard of it, can you define what that is?
Sure. So there's really only kind of one that's very notorious.
Okay.
No. Like, there's a lot.
Okay.
There's a lot, okay. But there's one that there's actually some biology behind it, where it's like, this is sort of why it happened. And that is the 4-month regression.
Yes.
And it can really happen between 3 to 5 months old, where a parent might say, my baby was sleeping 8 to 9 hours, and now they're up every 45 minutes. And really, this is what they call a progression, because we're moving forward and we're no longer a newborn. And so the baby has taken on the science of sleep as an adult. So when they're a newborn, they're really spending 50% of their time in two different stages. So we see longer stretches because they're not going up and down, in and out, sideways. When we get into these four different cycles, like you said, REM, non-REM, they're interchanging very often. So the baby comes into that light sleep after that REM cycle, they come into that light sleep, and then they fully wake up every 45 minutes, every 2 hours. And so that is actually what we do as adults. Yeah. We just have way more practice at it.
Yeah.
Right? So that's really the main one that I'm going to see. But if you look at my blog, I talk about four, and I'm actually thinking I'm going to coin a fifth, and I'll get to that in a second.
Yeah.
But 4-month regression, I just explained that one. The 8-month regression is really going to be gross motor skill related.
Okay.
They're crawling, they're pulling up, they want to practice all these fancy skills, right? So it can disrupt sleep. Sometimes they're in a nap transition. Also, object permanence is coming into play. So baby knows that mom exists after she leaves the room. And that's not cool that she left, right? So there's that. And then we think about toddlers, 18 months.
Oh,
girl.
These
people, if you've survived it, you know, gosh, you're like at the promised land. But
yes,
18 months, it's again, separation anxiety, lower sleep needs. So we see sleep needs drop around 19 months. So your baby needs less sleep. And a mama might think, well, I still need my 15-hour breaks.
Yeah.
But that's not going to work any. Right. And then at 2 years, kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
And then I like to talk about the 3 and 4-year-olds because we think.
I thought it was just my kids, because we're nearing, that, and something is happening. And I'm like, what is happening? Okay. Go into it.
Get prepared for it, because we stop talking about sleep when we're kind of out of the baby stage. But it's still, I tell people all the time, you are in maintenance mode. Like, you have got to keep this thing greased up and working, because kids will flip on a dime. Maybe it's that they're working on verbal skills, communication, they're frustrated, they're struggling with transitions, meaning, hey, baby, it's bedtime. They used to come easily, and now it's, I need this teddy bear, that blanket.
Yes. You know, I need a water. I'm thirsty. Yes.
And speaking about twins, I have one that has, knock on wood, she's never regressed. And I have another one that regresses every six months, like clockwork, right? You know?
That's true.
So it really is very dependent on the child, the personality. Some kids are just rule followers, and other ones are like, we're going to
push. We're going to turn up. It's time. I love that because, and I'm so glad you named them so clearly because I think the most infamous one is the 4 month. I don't remember that happening with my first, but again, it was before like everyone was on social media platforms. So maybe it was happening. I was like, oh, and then they get crumb out of it. But I love how you said that regression means they are progressing, like whatever way, if that's mentally, physically, they're growing. And so it's a good indicator that they are doing, their brain is doing the right thing. Their body is doing the right thing.
Exactly.
Just freaking sucks for the parent because you think you have this like, oh, my baby, it's sleeping. It's like, boom, just want to check you really quick. And then something happens.
Exactly.
And so for someone that's going through a regression, I'm sure it looks different in babyhood and you kind of talked about toddlerhood, but like, is it just wait? Like, what's the advice when someone's like, you know, when a baby is doing that, when they're hitting the 4 month or whichever one, what do you do?
Yeah, I think independent sleep is always going to be a way for a regression to be less just terrible.
Yes.
Or agreed. Shorten the duration because a baby that's teething that just doesn't know how to put themselves to sleep, they're teething and they need that extra comfort to get back to sleep. So it just seems more heightened and more cumbersome. And it can also last longer,
right?
So, I mean, if you don't want to teach independent sleep, that's perfectly fine. You will come out it on the other end for sure, but there's no really way to know how long it takes.
Right.
On the same or on the other side, an independent sleeper might regress for 1 to 2 weeks for no reason, or we can't see the reason.
Yeah.
And then my best advice there is take what you know and stick with it. Yes. Like, don't start any new habits if you don't want to, because girl, you just have to undo those.
Yes.
Right?
Oh my gosh. That's so true.
So,
yes. Go on.
You know, just keeping it super simple. Even if a past client comes back to me, they're like, well, we hit the 18 month regression. I act like I just met them. And I'm like, so tell me.
Yeah.
You know,
tell me about your schedule.
What are y'all doing over there?
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And they tell me, I'm like, okay, well, this has gotten a little bit, off the charts over here. Let's dial it all back in. You know, kids operate in black and white. And so they're looking for you to show them that sequence.
Yes.
And it's really, just keeping it very basic is what I tell parents to get through those regressions. Go back to the basics of maybe what I taught you, right? You know what works. It can work at any age. We have regression suck.
Yeah. And I, it's so funny you say that because I think at the 4 month, the first few regressions, once we knew what it was, we were very diligent about going in, encouraging independent sleep, not like changing what we already were doing when we were training. And like, it lasts like a week or two. I can't remember, but we're like, oh, phew. It felt like forever. But then anyways, then another regression, I can't remember what month it was. I was just so lazy. And I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to bring you in my bed. Cause I know it's going to be fine. Like I'll get to go back to sleep. Cause I'm tired of waking up every 30, 20, 45, whatever it was. I was tired of it. So I was like, yeah, I'll just bring her. Girl. And I tell you, that was the worst decision to get it. That lasted like a month, or they'd be like, mommy, like they would actually ask to be brought in the bed. I just create a new awareness that they realize, oh, I can do that. So I'm going to not self-soothe because that happened. Like they learned really fast the good ways. And the bad and the quote unquote other ways, like bad behaviors, or, you know, when they get what they like, what they wanted. So all to say is someone that did both, like, I wish I didn't ever bring them in my bed for that time because it was so hard to get that habit broken. So hard.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope.
It's slippery. So slippery.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, you know, you do what you need to do.
Yeah.
Right. You're surviving. You're tired. Believe me, I've walked through many families who have brought on new routines that they didn't want to keep, and we had to work on dropping them, and it's okay. It'll be fine.
Right. It'll be fine. And I shouldn't say bad behaviors. It's more just like behaviors that maybe you don't want to keep forever. We didn't want them sleeping in our bed forever. And so we probably should have done that. And there's still times where I bring them in my bed too, because they're sick or something like that. But all to know, when they're in a regression, and if you want to get, just go back to the basics. I love what Lindsay said. Like, remember what you know to be true. They will get past this. It is a regression. It's nothing is wrong. It's actually good. it means they're like developing and just kind of stick to your guns, so you will. Okay, so we had a couple of questions, some Q&A. Hold on 1 second. Okay, so we had a few questions, a Q&A that came in, and a lot of them we already like covered, but one that came in was, and this kind of goes with like the sleep regression stuff, is that my toddler keeps on getting out of bed. Are there ways to prevent this? What do I do? I feel that. Thoughts? What do you think?
Definitely. So yeah. I think this is a big concern for a lot of parents because like, okay, we've mastered the crib sleep, right? We're smooth sailing, but this thing in the distant future is like looming.
Yeah.
Right. Like we know this is coming up. So before I really address the question, I will talk about some ways to keep your kiddo in a crib longer, because
yes.
What we know is that a two-year-old, and it's okay for two-year-olds not in a crib, but they don't have any impulse control, right?
Mm.
And so when we take away that physical boundary, they might think, I know I'm not supposed to get up, but I'm going to anyway. Like mm-hmm. There's no thought process that says, I know I'm not supposed to get up, so I won't. You know, it's like, you know, a toddler that doesn't know to run out in the street. Like it's just, right. There's no connection there. I know this is a free space. And so when we think about that cozy crib, right, it's that physical boundary that kept them safe. You know, can you turn the crib around, right? Maybe mm-hmm. they have a taller side that faces out. Can you look at the schedule? Maybe you're putting your kid down too early and they're like, I'm not tired, lady. I'm going to jump out.
Right.
Right. Keep them in a sleep sack. Even two-year-olds, we can start using colors as a tool.
Uh-huh. So,
like if they know their colors, you can definitely start using that hatch clock and say red's for bed, green means get up.
Yeah.
I mean, that is something you can start early. And so a lot of kids will just take to those visual tools and be like, I know I could get up, but that green light, it's like the Bible over there.
Right.
Like,
I'm going to
the red light. So I do encourage parents to kind of look at how we can keep the kiddos in the crib longer.
And meaning that you're like, what?
Just getting closer to three years old.
Okay. That makes me
a more appropriate age.
Right. Like that just made me feel so good. Like I have kept, my kids are still in the crib and I was feeling some sort of guilt. Like, but I'm like, they're good right now. They're not climbing out. In my mind, I'm like, I thought it was a twin mom thing, or maybe I thought I was just lazy. I didn't know what I thought, but I was like, I'm just going to not break what's not broken, and it works for us. So the fact that you just said that, that makes me feel like, oh, maybe I did that on purpose because I knew that. No, just kidding. I just feel better.
We didn't take the side off until 3.5.
Okay.
Right. And I didn't fully convert the crib until 4. So we did like the toddler bed. Honestly, I mean, it's like giving a puppy the full reign of the house, like pee and poop and chew up everything. So, you know, a young child is the same way. And so, but if, you know, keep them in a crib for whatever the reason is,
mm-hmm.
The room is the new crib. And so we really have to think about safety 100% as the driving force here. A lot of people might even take their kids out of a crib because they think it'll help make them sleep better.
Mm.
No, this is very, very unlikely because again, they have this access to open room, open door, et cetera. There's no impulse control. So if your child is, you know, even 2 and 3 years old and they're coming out of a crib, you want to make sure those dressers are bound to the wall. There's no cords. I love a minimal style room anyway. I know, you know, many families don't have a playroom.
Right.
But let's take all the, you know, battery operated toys out and just have it very minimal, stuffed animals, a couple books. And I mean, again, it's going to, the gamut of what a child can do versus another one is just very different. Yeah. You know, I've seen kids who rip the curtains down, right? I mean, it's, we have to look at these personalities. So that's my biggest piece of advice here is to create a minimalist style room that's safe. If that even means using a baby gate at the door and or a closed door with a safety latch, I'm a fan of that because we have to keep our kiddos safe. Who wants a 2 and 3 year old going down the steps or going out the front door when they thought they were coming to your room?
Right.
So I can go further into it, but I do have 2 blogs that cover crib to bed.
Yeah.
And I also have a toddler bedtime chart, which is really nice.
Yeah. I saw that.
The kiddo sees the steps they take to bedtime. And so when you're using all of these tools and keeping a very consistent bedtime routine with boundaries, a kid can thrive.
Right. I'm grateful that you just named that. And I think like, the question was around toddlers getting out of bed. And then we had another question about crib to bed transition. And it's something that I think a lot of parents, there's a little anxiety around. Like I have a little bit of anxiousness thinking about changing my girl's room and what that's going to mean. And I know my twin, I love her to death, but she is going to be, she already tries to wake up her sister. Like she tries to find stuffed animals to throw at her. She tries to get in things. So I just know that not having that barrier is going to be something that we'd have to think about. So just thinking about the safety of the room, thinking about how it's okay to wait. And like, I love how you said 3.5 is when you took one side down, then 4, you did the toddler bed. It can be transition. It doesn't have to be like, now you're in this a whole new thing, you know, it's all or nothing. Uh-huh. So yep. Like, that was just helpful to hear as well. And maybe it just doesn't. And the fact of giving toddlers autonomy or them knowing what's going to happen, like the chart, I looked that up. I've already downloaded it on your site. Knowing what's going to happen, knowing this green to red light, you'd be surprised. Like everybody, you wouldn't be surprised. Once you have a toddler, you realize you can cut the banana wrong. You can give them the blue cup, you can give them the green cup, and they will have a full on tantrum. But if they know or they feel like they had some sort of independence in the decision, it just is a lot smoother. Yep. So
exactly. You want to make sure, like you said, the autonomy is super, super important. Giving them choices within the boundary. Yeah. Do you want the car jammies or the rainbow jammies?
Yes.
Do you want these socks? Those socks? You want this book, that book? It means a lot.
It does.
It goes a long way.
It totally does. And like, moms, you realize that's one thing you learn as you become like a more seasoned mom. It's like choices, ask them the choice before you put on the wrong jammies and there's no turning back. Another question we got was around the products that you would suggest for a like healthy sleep environment. I know that like, especially when you're in the thick of it, I didn't have the money to buy a Snoop, but I would have bought 3 of them. Like, and those are very expensive products. And like Dog Tux are there products that you suggest that you absolutely should have? And another follow-up question that I would wonder is like those really big expensive ones, is it totally worth it? And is it going to work for every child?
I mean, if you have the money to buy a Snoop, it's basically a bassinet that sort of intuitively soothes your child. Like if they're, it's got the swaddle built in, so it's keeping them in that safe position on their back. But let's be honest, as a twin parent, I can't afford that, And so that made me feel a little bit frustrated. I don't know if you've heard of the slumber pod, but again, it's 2
heard of that.
Things,
yeah.
You know, that we need 2 of everything. Right.
Yes.
So my best advice is to have them buy a product that they can sleep in when they're newborn, and then to get cribs that are convertible cribs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Get your money worth out of the crib that will convert into a toddler bed, and then a full size. So my girls sleep in a full size bed. They each have it in their old crib, right? So the footboard, and you just, it comes with all the parts and pieces. I would also suggest to order it all at one time, because your crib may go discontinued and then you're screwed.
Huh.
You know, and then you're looking for the parts and pieces and you can't find it.
Oh my gosh. I should make sure I have all the stuff. Okay. Yeah. Noted. I didn't even think about that.
I mean, if you can afford a Snoo, that's great. I have helped many families transition out of it, meaning their child still does not sleep well in it. Okay. So it's great, but it's not a magic tool. Yeah. Eventually they have to come out of it. I also feel like, crib positioners, pillows, Dock-a-Tots have all been recalled because they are not a safe place for you.
Have they? Dang, I didn't even know that.
The Bobby Lounger has been recalled. I don't think the Dock-a-Tot has yet. But it wouldn't surprise me if it's soon, because you see all these like cutesy, aesthetically pleasing pictures of these babies sleeping in this crib positioner. And it's really, really unfortunate because a new parent does not know that that's not safe. And mom was tired and took a nap and something bad happened. So we would much rather be sleep deprived than do something that's unsafe. And I'm coming from a non-judgmental place because believe me, I did some unsafe things, because sleep deprivation will drive you to your, you know, to the end of it.
Breaking point.
Breaking point, essentially. So you'll definitely want to avoid those. As a twin mom, you'll want to buy, you know, a twinsie pillow. I think that's great for feeding.
Yeah.
Also, but keeping in mind, it's not a place for your children to sleep. Unassisted or, you know, not monitored. So that's a slippery slope there. But like I said, somewhere for them to sleep, like pack and play. We had the baby trend twin nursery, which was really great. It was a double pack and play. So that twin pack and play that had the two bassinet inserts on top.
I saw that and I wanted it, but I didn't ever get it. I saw that.
I think every twin parent should have that because it has wheels on it. And
what?
So, yeah.
What? This is like a plug for them. We're not even trying to. Like, I didn't know that.
So we would literally every morning, like, wheel this thing out into the living room, you know, and then we'd wheel it back at bedtime. But it keeps them close, right? Because it's like a double bassinet, but they're in their own separate sleeping space. So yeah, that's my biggest sort of advice there on products is a place for the newborns, cribs that go to convertible beds, invest in a Hatch sound machine. There's so many other ones out there that I find that just quit working.
Oh.
I love that it's, I mean, we had like a Munchkin one. These things work for like
six months.
And then you're like, and Hatch is really great because if your product stops working and you contact customer service, they will send you a new one. Like, you don't need it. Right. And it syncs up with your phone. So it's a little bit of an investment, but it'll keep you going for years.
That's amazing. Sure. Actually, just speaking of sound machine, it's a question my husband had, y'all. Is there like, as he's a musician, so noises, like whatever sensitive, is there a volume that's too loud on the sound machine? Like, or obviously you can be too loud, but I think he's afraid that if it is like even the normal one, I think he's like, this seems too loud for them. It's going to damage their ears. Is there like suggested volumes for those things of like what it should be and how would we find out?
Yeah, I think there is for sure. So buy a product or machine that has a volume's able to be adjusted. It's not like it was.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yes.
Right. You need to go up and down. And, you know, even in my newborn guide, like I suggest, like, hey, crank that white noise up like momentarily to try to, you know, trigger that calming reflex, like I talked about. But generally speaking, the decibel is like that of a shower. So think about standing in the bathroom and how that shower sounds to you. So what I tell people to do is download a free decibel meter on your phone. You want that sound machine 3 feet from the baby, really. At any point, like it's not on top of them, it's not
that
within 3 feet. But some parents might say, well, we want to put it across the room. Well, then you'll just have to understand you'll want to turn it up. Mm-hmm. But put your phone in the crib where the baby, like, don't stand in front of the machine. Yeah. You'll put the phone where the baby is, and then it'll read that decibel. And it's usually about 60 to 70 is that nice green safe zone. Like I said, it might compare it to a shower,
right?
Versus a rock concert, you know, where you're getting like 75.
Oh, that's so helpful. I didn't even know you could do that. And like, as someone that has ear damage, he's a drummer, so he's just very like aware, and I know that too. But I was like, I don't know, I think you just, so that was super helpful. He's gonna listen like this part specifically and nerd out and be like, yes, now I have a system where I can check the volume. So awesome. I think also, like, I mean, going back to the products, I love that you named, like, just understanding that it's twin parents, it's two of everything. If you can afford it, great. But also I would just add that there's always going to be a new hip thing, y'all, that you'll see every influencer saying, this did this for me. This did, and you're going to see it everywhere. There was no Docotox or Snooze with my first one. He's the easiest sleeper. So, you know, you might be influenced or get got or feel like you have to have this new thing, but know that, like, what's new means it hasn't had that much longevity of knowing if it truly works for a long time or if it will be recalled. I was someone that got two DACA talks. I know you're not supposed to let your kids sleep in it, but like I said, luckily I took a nap and my husband was there, but things can happen. So all to say, the products you get, listen, they're made for specific reasons, follow those. And maybe I'm just saying, like, just know that you don't have to get the new hip thing, and also know that the new hip thing, again, hasn't had the longevity to know how safe or comfortable or like good it's going to be for your child. So I will just leave with that.
No, I mean, think about the Rock and Play. I mean, it was around forever. Like, that was like a product of the 90s.
Okay? Yes.
And it just recently, all this information came out, and it's heartbreaking, right?
Wait, so what did it? I don't even know. Wait.
Quote me on it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say it was like 2020. It came out that it was Fisher-Price had recalled them. They don't make them anymore.
They don't, right?
Because so many babies had died.
Right. I read this, but I forgot it. I didn't know it was the Rock and Play. Yeah. Oh.
Like, I talk about this in my newborn guide a lot. There is no magic product.
There isn't.
Right. And so we go down these rabbit holes of, oh, I'm going to get this. And, you know, this is going to solve all our problems. I even have like a blog on what's the secret to baby sleep. And it goes through all of these products that we think we need and buy. And it's too much.
Yeah, it's too much. I would say the three things that actually did help my baby sleep, I had the Hatch sound machine, some blackout curtains. I did invest in that. It was helpful. And a swaddle. Those are three things. Or a sleep sack or something like that. Those were like the only real things that I needed, like, to really, I think, help my baby to sleep. All the other stuff was, you know, in a crib, you know, like somewhere to sleep, but, you know, I digress.
I mean, a sleep sack, a sound machine, and blackout curtains, you'll be still using those at 4 years or well, three years old, right?
So yeah, it's like those still are using
stable things that can move along with the kiddos.
Yes, 100%. Okay. Now, before we end, I wanted to ask, as for like a new mom starting out, or maybe just thinking about to your old former self as a mom coming home with newborn babies, is there like one piece or your top piece of parenting advice? We've given a lot, but one thing you would extra stress hard for someone journeying into their sleep teaching journey with their kids, what would it be? What would be that piece of advice? If there's one. That's a lot of questions.
I just think that you're not alone, probably. Part of my postpartum journey was the like oppressive pressure of feeling like I had to just figure it all out. And I had to have the answers, and like that my twins just solely relied on me. I mean, yes, I have a very active husband, you know, father, but they don't beat to the same drum that we do. And so I think, you know, looking for the resources and support that speak to you, we ask for help in so many aspects of our lives, whatever it is. So just to know that there's resources out there for you if you want them, whether it's an online guide, a Facebook group, another twin mom, or a sleep expert, right? We're here to help. So yeah, I mean, ask for help. It's twins specifically. I can only speak to that because I didn't have any other children.
Right.
And you kind of, it's great. You have both, you know, vantage points,
right?
But you need help. And we don't have those villages anymore, but you know, my neighbors used to drop off Chick-fil-A because they knew how tired we were. So it's just like those little things that you won't ever forget.
Yes.
You know, those people that helped you and just kind of swallow your pride and just say, hey, you know, I need to take a shower. Can you, you know, come just watch the babies or whatever it is. So yeah, ask for help, find your lifeline.
Yeah,
out here.
100%. And I would even say if you can't afford it, there's certain things that like I wish was on my registry versus some random stuff that I got, like maybe baby socks. I don't know. One would be a sleep consultant because I did not have one. It was in COVID. There was a lot going on, but like after going through it, that was probably like the thing I searched and scoured the internet for as many resources as I could. And it was so desperate. And again, there's a lot of misinformation out there. So like cut through the weeds and maybe finding someone that's an expert with twins or has dealt with that too, it just will save you a lot of time and like at least knowing that you're on the right path and that there's like an end or a destination and there's someone that's holding you accountable and helping you through that would be amazing. So I just want to thank you, Lindsay, again, for coming. again, this is, you can follow Lindsay on IG at Tweet Dreams. So that's with two Z's at the end, TweetDreamZ on IG. And you can find a book, a consultation with her. You can read the blog that she spoke, which is a great blog. I've read several different posts of it. And there's a lot of free support packages. Like there's sleep guides for newborn babies, for twins. There's a toddler bedtime chart, which I told you I've downloaded and I've incorporated in my unique way for my twins. So I just want to thank you and definitely use that as a resource. Again, this has been That Twin Mama Podcast. Thank you all for joining in. Till next time.
Hey. And that is it for today's episode of That Twin Mama Podcast. But before we bounce, I'm going to leave y'all with two requests. The first is, if you are enjoying this podcast, please follow along and leave us a 5-star review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, whichever your preferred platform is. These ratings do a lot for our engagement, but also gives us the inspiration, the push to keep on showing up for you all week after week with some great content that we are sure you're going to enjoy. And secondly, follow us on our socials. You can find me at That Twin Mama Podcast on Instagram and at That Twin Mama on YouTube. On Instagram, you'll see a lot of short form versions of these videos, but a lot of content that relates to the subject matter week after week that I am sure you're going to love. So until then, again, thank you for showing up. Thank you for all your support, and we look forward to seeing you next time. Peace, y'all.